Welcome to the three inning save podcast. No three inning save for the Dodgers, so immediately just a much worse week.
A terrible week, some would say. No three inning save. How could you possibly have a good week? Part of it is because they didn't even have a lead to protect in the last few games against the Diamondbacks, because the Dodgers are a 500 team, just like they were last week when we recorded. So maybe that's our lot this year. It's a three inning save. So who
knows? But hey, if we get a three inning save every 2 weeks, I think we'll. What fan wouldn't take that trade off of
every 10 games? I think is the thing here. So if you look at it in that perspective,
missing the playoffs, being mediocre, good. But you get that. Well,
three inning save though.
Yeah. We'll break down why this team is so iffy. See if we think there's reason to hope, things they could change. Question from Greg after this. So it's a thing where you could say, well, you know, other than really egregious starts from Noah Syndergaard and Michael Grove, Dodgers were, you know, would have been in those two brutal losses. And, you know, especially if you wanted to add on a pretty iffy, mediocre start by Clayton Kershaw. The problem is that's two and a half of their starters, and that's a big part of baseball.
Yeah, that's rough. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, yeah. How was the play, right? But like, no, it was, you know, it's all about perspective, right? Like they look terrible over the weekend, which teams are wont to do sometimes. But they're still 5-5, so they're not like 2-8, you know, or something. Or whatever the Lakers started this year, I think they were 2-10 at some point. I don't know. Like it was,
and they have played a lot of games against the division leading Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's true. The juggernaut Diamondbacks, who, because of the scheduling. So this year we talked about this, where every team plays everybody instead of 19 divisional games against each team, it's 13. So they've played 8 of their 10 games against the Diamondbacks. So they don't play them again until August. So it's just like this weird, funny schedule quirk. But yeah, like, the Dodgers. The other sort of perspective on this, the Dodgers won their first three games since we last recorded, and they were barreling toward an undefeated week. But then then the weekend happened, not the actor/singer. But the Diamondbacks scored 29 runs in the last three games of the weekend. It was a 4-game series. You mentioned Kershaw. He made his 400th career start Friday. So he's the 34th major league pitcher to start that many times for one team. I don't think he's going to get to the Walter Johnson's record of 666 starts with the Senators, unless maybe Kershaw makes a deal with the Devil to get to 666. And then you never know. Not putting it past him. But he pitched 6 innings, so that in itself, fine. But in that 6th inning, he gave up back-to-back homers.
A week after one, Eric Steven assured us that giving up a lot of homers was in Clayton Kershaw's past and an aberration and a thing he had improved upon.
I don't believe what my exact quote was.
Let's just assume it's
over. Yeah, I think it's no more. I did the Vince Carter after the dunk contest. Like, it's over. Like, yeah, that's excellent on an audio podcast. So that game. So Kershaw leaves with like a 1-run deficit. Bullpen comes in, it becomes a 3-run deficit because the bullpen's been bad. And then in Saturday's game, the bullpen allowed 6 more runs. That like was bad, but it looked even worse because Noah Syndergaard, who started, also gave up 6 runs. And so the Dodgers scored 8, a game that I think, you know, most teams win. I don't remember the exact number, but it's something like 85% to 90% of the time, and then they lost 12-8.
You texted Craig and I think, and something in the beginning of that game, and I was in Easter Vigil service Saturday, so I couldn't check the score until afterwards. And so I load my phone up, and it had been a while since you texted. So I was like, oh, maybe they made a comeback. And who knows, maybe you were complaining that, oh, they gave up 2 runs or something like that. Yeah. And so it uploaded, and it's like Dodgers at the time, I think it was 7 runs that they had. I was like, hey, maybe comeback. Oh, no. It's more than 7 runs by the other team.
The Dodgers led that game 4-0 in the first inning, and they lost by 4. But then, so then the bullpen got taxed even further on Sunday because Michael Grove got absolutely torched and was yanked with one out in the fourth. He gave up 9 runs. But like all this, you know, taxing of the bullpen being bad, it's like just like this bad combo that sort of feeds on itself, especially when the starters aren't good. And the Dodgers scored 6 on Sunday too. They just lost 11-6. So, the Dodgers bullpen has been kind of bad in the early going. Again, we're talking about 10 games, 4.82 ERA. It ranks 20th. They have a FIP of 2.97. Take that for what it's worth. That's actually fourth best. They're 5% walk rate from the bullpen. Very good. Lowest in Major League Baseball. But they aren't striking anybody out. The bullpen, 19.4%. That's 24th in the majors. Like the last, in recent years, the Dodgers have been very good just generally in the bullpen. Even though, like, you know, people are going to complain about the bullpen even when the bullpen's good. Same thing for, like, hitting with runners in scoring position. Even when the Dodgers have led, like, every single category in runners in scoring position, it's like, oh, this team can't get it by a hit with whatever. So take that for what it's worth. But they've been in the top 4 in baseball in strikeout rate out of the bullpen in 4 of the last 6 years. They were 4th last year. Fewer strikeouts, it should be obvious, it leads to more balls in play. That's more subject to variance than, you know, strikeouts are. Dodgers relievers this year have a 333 batting average on balls in play. MLB wide is 299 on just everything. So, you know, maybe part of it's bad luck. Maybe they're getting hit around a little more. But I think the sort of bullpen, given how it's been used and how taxed it is, I think they could use a fresh arm. So we're recording this Monday. So by the time people are listening to this, like, any sort of move I'm talking about here might have already happened or didn't happen. But they enter into this series against the Giants, 3 games, starting Monday night. I'm guessing they will probably have at least four of the 8 relievers unavailable, which it's so weird okay, there's a limit now, so teams can quote-unquote only carry 13 pitchers. It's wild to me with 8-man bullpens how often teams are, like, really short on available relief. It's just how they are used. Sometimes it's a schedule thing. But if you look, like, Phil Bickford threw 2 innings Sunday, part of that, like, cleanup effort. Shelby Miller threw 1 inning and 2/3, both threw 27 pitches. You know, it would figure it's unlikely they'll pitch Monday. Caleb Ferguson threw 29 pitches in his 1 inning Sunday. Andre Jackson threw 30 pitches in 2 innings Saturday. It was very much not a 3-inning save. I think when he entered down, it was 9-6, I think, when he entered the other way. And then Bruiser Gratterall pitched Friday and Saturday. So if he pitches Monday, it'd be this. He'd pitch 3 out of 4. The Dodgers have only done that once this year. It was Phil Bickford earlier in the week. Alex Vesia threw 20 pitches Saturday. So taking all into account, they have a very light bullpen. Now, the positive is that of all the people in the rotation to have a light bullpen with, Julio Urias is the best option because he's just been their most reliable in terms of just going, like, at least 6 innings. And one plus, I guess this is one of those funny things. If you're on the road and you lose, you only have to pitch 8 innings most of the time. So you're actually saving your bullpen by being a bad team sometimes. But no, Urias is starting Monday, so it's not like super dire. But I think, to me, this is also about Michael Grove, who's been very bad in his 2 starts. Now, in fairness, against the Rockies on Monday, he allowed 3 runs in 4 innings. He was also sick leading up to that, and there was some question to whether he might even make that start. So if you want to, like, completely dismiss that, fine. But he also gave up 9 runs on 12 hits in 3 1/3 innings on Sunday. He might have been left in to wear it a little bit. It is still so early in the season, but, like, if you look at, you know, like, this is one of those fun small sample size things, fun being in quotes. Michael Grove's ERA right now, 14.73. His expected ERA on StatCast is 3.20. So Robert said after the game Sunday, I believe Jack Harris had this in the story. I did not watch Sunday's game. I caught up with it after I got home from Easter stuff. with family, and I did not find the actual video. The truncated thing that Sportsnet LA put out did not include this part, but Dave Roberts said that Grove would get at least one more start. So my sort of theory was that Grove should be optioned on Monday because he shouldn't start again, like, next time out. And they figure out the starter later, but right now you're getting an extra reliever. I will say this, that in the part that Sportsnet LA shared, Robert sounded very exasperated when talking about Grove's outing, not to the point of like, he's like, I'm done with this guy, but like, let's just hear, this is what Robert had to say about Grove from Sportsnet LA.
You know, I think today, you know, we got beat on in every facet. Michael wasn't sharp, getting behind in the count, and they were on the fastball. They were on everything. You know, when he made him, when he threw the breaking ball, it was elevated, and they put the bat on the ball, got some flare hits, hit some a lot of balls hard, and so for us to have to try to cover, you know, five plus, it was tough. But at some point, you know, he threw enough pitches, and we had to find a way to cover it and, you know, get through the game.
So in total, 12 runs on 14 hits for Grove. In again, 7 1/3 innings. In my opinion, like that is not good enough to earn a third start. Like, if you want to be charitable and say, sick one start, had to wear it a little bit Sunday, fine. But like, it's rough. like roster wise, it would make sense to option him Monday, so you get an extra reliever for four games before his start Saturday, or that start Saturday. But obviously that's not going to happen. Another quirk of the roster right now, because the Dodgers opened the year with eight pitchers, on the injured list. They only have two pitchers who are on the 40-man who aren't already active. So it's lefties Victor Gonzalez and Justin Brühl. Gonzalez pitched Sunday, pitched very well, striking out three of the four outs he pitched. And Justin Brühl pitched Friday. I believe he struck out four in that outing. So both are pitching well, but like, yeah. The other thing is starting options after Michael Grove right now are kind of limited, at least for the next few weeks or the rest of the month. Tony Gonsolin is at best slated for late April return, but like that's seeming like a pipe dream at this point. Like he had bullpen sessions this week. I believe he faced hitters in Arizona at Camelback Ranch on Wednesday. Dave Roberts, I don't remember if this was about the one of the bullpen sessions or the facing hitters on Wednesday, but Roberts was like, you know, kind of went okay. It wasn't like the best bullpen. He's still dealing with the ankle sprain, but he also has to like progress to like facing more hitters, maybe a sim game. And then he probably has to have like two or three rehab starts. So like, we're still like a ways away from him returning. Ryan Pepio has an oblique strain. Like, when's the last time you've ever heard of someone with an oblique strain returning right away? Like, that just never happens. So, like, he's, like, out until he's not. They could, like, if they wanted to, like, have Andre Jackson start. But, like, he's probably, given how he's been used, he's, like, a 3-4 inning guy. And then it's essentially, like, a bullpen game, but not a full bullpen game kind of a thing. They could call up Gavin Stone. Like, he's not on the 40-man. But Alex Reyes, also one of those injured list pitchers, he's not expected to be out back for a while because he had shoulder surgery last May and is still recovering. I don't think he's even throwing yet. As of like last week, I believe Dave Roberts said he was just doing like plyo work at Camelback Ranch, so like not really doing much at all. Stone is slated to start Tuesday for Oklahoma City. Again, given what Roberts said about Grove starting Saturday, I expect Stone to still start that game for Oklahoma City, but if it were up to me, I think Stone's probably the best option right now if they wanted to insert, like, you know, fresh blood or whatever.
And Stone had a bad first game in Oklahoma, yeah, right?
Six runs in, like, 2 2/3.
Not doing anything, just...
Yeah. You're, like, that's the thing. Like, he's not, like an obvious solution. He just has a better, higher upside than Grove, basically. So, like, that's the thing this year. We've talked about this. There's a lot of potential for a lot of the roster choices they made, but there's a lot of variance, too, like, of stuff that might not happen when you're relying on so many relative unknowns. Like, a lot of it has to go right. for you to sort of win. Now that we've talked about how bad the pitching was, a lot of those choices have gone right, especially on the offensive side. The Dodgers offense right now, again, only 10 games. They're averaging 6 runs a game. They've scored 5 or more in 7 out of 10, doing really well. James Outman, one of those rookie choices, has been dynamic, I would say, at the plate and in center field. I think he's also played left a couple games. But Will Smith has been great at the plate. Freddie Freeman, he's hitting .421 entering Monday. He and Miguel Vargas have both reached base more than half the time. And so MLB announced Monday they're doing these, like, I believe Dairy Queen is termed a partner of MLB. And so they're going to do ads with, like, 4 players. I think it's Ozzie Albies, Chris Bryant, and another player who I'm not remembering. I just made me remember that last year, 2 of the 4 players who were also paired in at least one commercial together were Cody Bellinger and Fernando Tatis, who went on to have exceptional seasons in 2022 for their team. So good luck to Freddie Freeman with that one. So JD Martinez on the older side of variance in this.
I'm sorry, Chris, I'm now. Are you inventing the DQ curse?
I think so. I believe last year was the first year of it. So
it's first I remember.
Last year too. But I mean, they also had Bryce Harper and Tim Anderson. Now you could argue Bryce Harper, like, with the elbow thing, but he also, like, hit a pennant winning home run. Yeah. So, like, I think it's not a fully fleshed out idea. I just thought that the fact that Bellinger and Tatis were in like, they were grouped
together. They each had, like, a signature blizzard or something, right?
Yeah, I think that's
right.
We need
to figure out if there's some like, only if your blizzard has X.
Oh, the blizzard ingredient index or whatever?
Sorry, I distracted
no,
you.
No, this is way more important than anything we're talking about. Now, I'm not anywhere near a Dairy Queen. I'm not really craving a blizzard, but I kind of want one now just because you mentioned it. But so JD Martinez already has 6 doubles and a triple. He had a triple on Sunday. He also had a home run earlier in the year. Jason Hayward, who was very much a question mark because he's been terrible and injured for the last 2 years. He didn't start at any of the games in the opening series, but he started 4 times this last week, and he homered in 3 of them. He's just been hitting the crap out of the ball, basically. There's been, like, you know, stragglers too. Max Muncy's 4-for-33 with 16 strikeouts. He's also struggled on defense. I think Mike Petriello put out a thing. The StatCast leaderboards are up for, like, some of the stats now. And on outs above average, he's one of the worst so far because it's been an adventure for Max Muncy so far this season. Chris Taylor has homered twice, but he's 3-for-24. David Peralta's 4-for-23. Although he's been hitting the ball kind of hard too, but a lot of ground balls. Miguel Rojas, 2-for-17. He also missed 5 games last week with a left groin strain before playing again on Sunday. Now, how they manage that, we've seen this before where the Dodgers try to avoid the injured list and trying to sort of gain on the back end of what would be like 10 games missed for a position player. And a lot of the times it's because, like, in recent years, like, what are you going to do? Like, call up Luke Rayleigh or something, you know? And, like, what are you really gaining? In this case, it's like, had they put Rojas on the injured list, so they call up Yonny Hernandez, what does that mean? Right. Like, is he going to, he might start a game in that span. They don't, you know, there's a DH now. They don't really pinch hit much anymore. There's a little bit of maneuverability, but I think
you gain a little maneuverability around the shortstop position. Like, if you wanted to pinch hit a not Chris Taylor for
sure,
but it's not much for sure.
And then, like, I think the Dodgers have used mostly, it's usually like 10 players a game instead of 9 position players. So, like, you might get one either late inning swap on defense or a pinch hitter or something. But yeah, it's just not, they're not using like 13 guys a night. So, like, and just the fact that there's not there's no double switching because, I mean, there's no pitcher hitting. So, like, it's just it's a weird situation where it's so odd because now you have to have a 13-player bench as opposed to, like, teams carrying 14 pitchers and stuff. But there's not a lot of use always for that, like, 13th bench guy or whatever, 13th player. So it's a very weird thing. But in all, so, like, the Dodgers are 5-5. It somehow feels worse than that, but I think it's just because of the timing, right? Like, the last two games are especially bad, but they've also lost 3 in a row. So, yeah. Okay. You could, speaking of curses, Bob Nightingale, who tweeted as only he can after the first win in Arizona, it was something like, oh, the Dodgers are back on top as usual or something, leading the NL West at 5-2. Now, it's a pretty innocuous feat. I'm not knocking about it. It's just sort of fun. But it's just funny, like, how it was the shiniest object at the moment, and he just sort of pointed at it and said, hey, look at that, you know. I just thought that was funny. But they are 0-3 since. So if Bob Nightingale is eating a blizzard, be careful. This week, the Dodgers play the Giants, as we mentioned, in San Francisco. And then they are back home to play the Cubs with the aforementioned Dairy Queen sponsor, Cody Bellinger, making his Dodger Stadium return, along with Edwin Rios. I think he'll get a lesser ovation, but still a good ovation. Then Bellinger should get a very nice long ovation. That should be fun. So speaking of Dairy Queen, wow, these segues are just stellar. Freddie Freeman, so far, 11 singles, 4 doubles, a home run, and 7 walks. He's one of 14 LA Dodgers to reach base at least 23 times in the first 10 games of a season. Who holds the LA Dodgers record for times reached base in the first 10 games of a season? And how many of the other players in between that player and Freeman can you name?
3. And I will guess those 3 after this. Who holds the Dodger record for reaching base in the first 10 games? How many times? I have it on good authority that the record is held by Jackie Robinson with 30 times reached in the first 10 games. What do I get? Yep.
That's the franchise record, but I asked who was the LA Dodger. Jackie Robinson did it his in 1953. The interesting part about that was included 14 walks and 3 hit-by-pitches. That guy was getting plunked and just... Yeah, it was rough out there. And, my hint to you is the leader in the LA Dodgers is someone in the last decade.
Okay.
And of the 14 players, or I guess 13 besides Freeman, 5 are in the 2000s. And that means like 2000 since, not just 2000 to 2009.
Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger matched his Dairy Queen compadre with 23 times reach base in 2019 in the first 10 games. That season ended well for Cody Bellinger, I would say.
Yeah.
He had 7 home runs in those first 10 games. 18 RBIs, by the way. That's fun.
So where is he on the list?
Bellinger, Freddie Freeman, and one other Dodger are tied for 12th.
Okay. So
the leader has 28. By the way, the
last 10 years, you said. Right, just confirming my hint. Your hint.
Do you want another hint?
No. I've done a really good job of reading these ahead of time to avoid exactly what's going on now, and I did not do this time around because somebody didn't send me the notes until 1 minute before recording. not the last 10 years, but I almost randomly said Casey Blick for no reason. let's see. Who other are they? Corey Seager.
No, but one hint to you is this person is an infielder.
Max Muncy.
No. I'll give you the year. 2015.
That's an awkward. That was like a transition year.
This person was 22 for 40, among other things.
Alrighty. Adrian Gonzalez.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Started the year with, like, I think it was 5 home runs in 3 games. One of those was a 3 home run game. He also walked 6 times, so 28 times. Do you want to take a shot at naming the other ones? So the other years are 2008, 2005, and
2012. Geez. I've guessed one run name so far.
Yeah.
I'll give myself 2 more run answers. Mm-hmm. Rafael Furcal.
That is correct. He's tied for 3rd with 25 times to start 2008. If you remember that year, he got hurt relatively early. So he was like playing like an MVP level. Then he got hurt and missed forever. And then they got Manny Ramirez, who was playing like an MVP level. And then finally Furcal came back at the very end of the year. So, like, it was a weird year.
Russell Martin.
No. The other two are an infielder and an outfielder. 2005 was infielder. 2012 was outfielder.
Okay. I had one more name to guess and be wrong about. And then Plum forgot. Do I want to tap out? Jeff Kent. How about that?
That's correct.
Yeah. He's
also tied with Furcal, but in 2005. 15 for 37, 5 doubles, 3 homers, 9 walks in those first 10 games. You want to give a stab at the outfielder?
2012, you said?
Yeah. Coming off a very strong year.
Don't say that because it's making... No, I'm tapping out. It's going to take too long.
Matthew Ryan Kemp.
Sure.
Yeah.
I would probably guess that sooner than I would have guessed. So, yeah. Oh, well. I remember content.
In the early going, so I
said 3, I got 3.
That's true. So I'm trying to think. There, one of the games, the home opener, where Aaron Harang struck out 9 batters in a row out of nowhere. Matt Kemp homered earlier in that game, and I think I was sitting next to Dylan Hernandez in the press box, and I turned to him and I go, you know, if Matt Kemp homers here, he'll be slugging 1,000. And he homered right then. So, yeah, but through 10 games, that included this game, I'm sure. Matt Kemp, 487, 523, 1,026 slugging, 6 home runs, 16 RBIs. It was a reasonably hot start for Matt Kemp. Then he got hurt, and then things got weird.
Well,
good times.
Thank you. I'm happy with how I did.
Yeah,
but I doesn't mean. And you know what? No, I'm gonna change how I normally phrase this. Whoa. I hope you do great.
Whoa.
On these next 4 questions from Craig, because it's time for
questions from Craig. We love them.
The Dodgers will celebrate Jackie Robinson Day this upcoming Saturday, and with that in mind, this week's trivia questions are about Dodger recipients of the now-named Jackie Robinson Award, a.k.a. the Rookie of the Year Award. The Rookie of the Year Award. You ready?
Yeah.
The Dodger franchise has won this award how many times, Eric?
18.
That's not. Oh, yeah, you're reading notes. 12 position players and 6 pitchers. Can Eric name the 6 pitchers who have won this award?
Hopefully. Okay. So Joe Black, 1952.
Yep.
Rick Sutcliffe, 1979. Steve Howe, 1980. Some guy named Fernando in 1981.
Mm hmm.
Hideo Nomo in 1995. Okay, so now I think the other one is Don Newcomb in 1949.
You are correct.
Okay, good.
The first National League winner, right? Is that right? Yeah, because it was a unified the first.
Oh, it was Major League the first two. Yeah. Okay.
And okay, sorry, I have to bring my cheat sheet up, otherwise I am lost. Until Mike Piazza had one of the greatest rookie seasons in history, which Dodger franchise position player had the highest baseball reference B-War season at 4.6?
Okay, so I'm taking a kind of a blind stab at this. This is the wrong rookie of the year or just rookies?
I'm on some rookie of the year winners.
Okay, so I think he walked like 100 times. I'm going to guess Jim Gilliam in 1953.
No.
Hmm. Then we have problem. Okay, so position player, 4.6.
Triple for confirming for you. This player did win Rookie of the Year.
Okay. Very interesting. And this is before Piazza, so. Oh boy. Is it Frank Howard?
It is not. Do you want a decade?
No. But I will. Okay, so I'm going to do one more guess. I think I'm just going to say, with very little conviction, Steve Sachs.
No, Jim Lefebvre Bray.
Yeah. I almost guessed him. Switch hitter, homers. Yep. All right.
Just say a bunch of words. Six position players have stolen 10 or more bases in their rookie of the year season. Can Eric name these freshman thieves?
What a great phrase.
And for bonus, can he pick the top four in order of most stolen bases?
Okay. So Steve Sachs, I want to say he was in like, he could have stolen like 52, but I think it was in the 40s. So I'm just putting him there for now.
Okay.
1982. Rookie of the year season. Then it gets tricky. Okay. Didn't steal much. Stole a little, maybe. what a wonderful way of my brain working here. I am struggling right now because I'm having a hard time. Okay, no, and then the 50s was like the worst stolen base decade, so I'm kind of ruling out Gilliam, but I will get back to this in a second. I'm pretty sure Raul Mondesi hit 16 home runs in his 1994 rookie season. I think he stole like around that many. So I'm just listing him here for a second. Okay. Raul Mondesi, 94. I don't remember how many. I'm going to say Bellinger stole a little more than him in 2017. And then because I am just having a rough time figuring out the rest, this is rough. I will go, I'm not all that enthused about, how many bases Jim Lefebvre stole. I'm going to say Gilliam in fourth position there.
All right. So Steve Sachs stole 49.
Okay, so almost 50. Got it.
Jackie Robinson stole 29.
Forgot about the Jackie Robinson Award winner. The literal Jackie Robinson Award winner, yeah.
Jim Gilliam stole 21.
Whew, all right.
Todd Hollinsworth stole 21.
Come on, yeah.
Raul Mondesi stole 11, and Cody Bellinger stole 10.
All right, so
you said some names that were up there.
I was nearing the ballpark.
Four position players had career B-WAR of 20 or higher as a Dodger. Who are these very good Dodger players? kind of lost the source there for no freshman thieves.
Who are these ample Dodger players? No. So Jackie Robinson, Jim Gilliam.
Correct and correct.
And then, oh boy. Oh, so I think Karros gets dinged because he was a first baseman. Mike Piazza for sure.
Yep.
I think it's Bellinger.
It is Raul Mondesi.
Okay.
Yeah, well, always, Bellinger, like, I know he gets dinged because he's a first baseman, but it still always surprises me how low total WAR Karros is.
Yeah, like it's like, okay, I get it. He wasn't like, you know, great shakes or anything, but like, was he that bad? Like, you know, or whatever.
Apparently.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm looking up because I so Bellinger with the Dodgers, 17.7 WAR. I would have guessed a little less than half of that was MVP year. Yeah, rough.
Max Muncy had a very good spring training, hitting 304, 418, 587, and 55 plate appearances. He's got it off to a slow start, striking out 16 times and 31 at-bats. Given the roster construction, the Dodgers don't have a lot of options at third base, and Dave Roberts tends to be patient with his veterans anyways. But should Robert consider moving him down in the lineup until Muncy appears to be back to his multi-30 home runs hitting self?
Whew. I mean, probably. Like, I don't, like, so they could do right now, like, without moving much. On days Will Smith starts, he's been hitting third. And then they usually been going Max Muncy fourth against righties, and then JD Martinez fourth against lefties, and then flip. Because Austin Barnes started Sunday and then later got ejected in a very dejected day for the team. David Peralta, who not a slugger, I would say, they just put him hitting third. It was a very odd lineup construction that day. And then they had – it was followed by Martinez, then Muncy. I think it would probably be fine if they moved Muncy down a little bit. Like, I don't know, like, how – yeah, like, I guess maybe have him figured out, or – unless they're like really like seeing something where he's like really close, you know, or whatever they're going to say. He doesn't really need to be hitting fourth, especially like in this lineup. You basically can go Betts, Freeman, Smith, Martinez, and then figure out the rest. So like, I don't think Muncy should be batting higher than fifth normally. Are they going to move like Outman or Vargas to fifth or something?
And no, that's kind of like, yeah. You know, historically Roberts has definitely used kind of lineup positions as a way to kind of instill, like, show confidence with any player, like, you know, writing, you know, putting them in sort of a position of honor, maybe, you know, as truth, like, hey, we know you're going to get out of here. But a way you could do this is definitely saying like Outman and Vargas are just the hot hands and we have to get them.
Yeah.
Out of the bottom of the lineup.
So you could do a thing where so Outman's a lefty batter. I guess you could, it's just so weird, like, you could go fully like into the left right left thing. So if you just keep Smith and Martinez third fourth, you could go Outman fifth, Vargas sixth, Muncy seventh. That's probably the most extreme they would do. I don't think they're going to move Muncy to seventh unless he's like really slumping or whatever. But like, or you could just do, I guess, because then if you go, like say Vargas fifth, right, or and then Muncy sixth, are you going to have Outman seventh? So then you have two lefties there. So like, then you don't. I mean, they batted Outman eighth some games, but like, So it's a very weird thing, like in a weird way. Not that you have to have Muncy up there, but I don't see him falling lower than sixth in the lineup, I guess. But he's probably just going to be fifth for a little bit, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think they just need him to hit generally. And whatever it takes to get there is going to be a thing they're going to try. But I guess he's probably got a longer rope than probably anyone thinks, because I know last year, like, they were pretty stubborn about him sort of like A, playing, and B, hitting, like, you know, relatively middle of the order type. So yeah, I think he's just gonna stay mostly where he's at.
Most triples by a Dodger rookie in the last 20 years is the 7 that Andre Ethier had in 2006. Does James Outman have a chance of tying or going over that number this season? Note that Outman hit 9 triples in 2021 and 7 last season.
He's at 2 right now, right? Like, he hit the 2 in one game earlier in the week.
Sounds right.
Because I think, yeah, because they hit 2 other triples Sunday, and I think those are their only 4. Miguel Vargas and JD Martinez, the other 2, which is fun. So 7 triples is a lot. Gavin Lux hit 7 triples, led the league, tied for the league lead last year. So I think he's going to tie Ethier. He's going to hit 7 triples.
He's going to beat it. Lock of the week. Put it in the contest.
I am always rooting for someone to hit double-digit triples. So if he gets to there, cool. I will say, so he had the 2 triples in the game last week against the Rockies. He also, Alex Friedman of Oklahoma City pointed this out in AAA last year. Outman also had a 2-triple game. It was one of his 2 cycles, which is just an insane thing to say. He hit 2 cycles in 5 days for Oklahoma City. He's been doing okay for several months now. So
I don't think there's any chance the Dodgers would or even could option Brusdar Graterol, but his inability to strike out hitters continues to be a sticking point. How do you suggest the Dodgers proceed with this problem?
Yeah, so, like, he's still, like, we talked about how bad the bullpen's been. He's had a couple shaky outings. Like, he took the loss in the Sunday game in the opening series against Arizona, the 2-1 game. And it's just, like, he just doesn't miss enough bats, right? Like, even if it's not strikeouts. However, he usually does get fairly weak contact, but even, like, just, like, contact in general, the stuff can happen, right? So, like, I think more than anything, it's going to limit him from ever being, like, anointed like the closer, right? They're not going to go into a season and go, well, he's our guy, like, you know, unless he makes, like, a dramatic improvement in that regard. Now, he's still going to probably pitch important innings because he's been pretty effective. He's generally been very good at, like, limiting hard contact. And, like, he gets a lot of weak contact, but it's just been, you know, sometimes you need to, like, miss bats, and it's been an issue that he just hasn't been able to. But, yeah, optioning him, given the current, for lack of a better term, options right now, like, I don't see it. Like, I guess maybe later in the year if they have other pitchers, like, who are ready. Like Daniel Hudson is, like, he was maybe late April, and that doesn't sound like it's going to happen now. And he was, like, the closest, I think, reliever who were of the hurt guys to come back to. I don't really, like, they need Brusdar Graterol. I don't think they're going to option him unless mm-hmm. he's truly bad. Like, there's other pitchers who've been worse than him. Like, Alex Vesia also has options, and he has been worse than Graterol. But, like, I don't see them optioning him either necessarily, unless things go totally bad. But, like, I just think he'll just be limited in that he'll be more of the, like, a Pedro Baez type. Although they have given Graterol occasional save opportunities, Baez very rarely got them. So maybe a little bit better, but just less so on the strikeouts. But if he ever, like, figures out how to miss more bats, he could be great, like, yeah, really good. So, like, I think they're sort of going to keep trying to unlock that and, like, keep giving him chances. So that's where I think that's where they're at with him.
Growing up, we had fried corn tortillas as the vessel for the old school seasoned ground beef taco. Now, most vendors use fresh corn tortillas. They are also sold in stores. You can get this taco shells in stores.
Yep.
Del Taco offers tacos in flour tortillas. What are your preferences when having a taco?
Okay, so like corn tortillas are great. When I make them at home, I almost always use flour because of the messiness. Now, if I'm going out to like getting like a street taco at a restaurant or something, those are always corn. And they are generally very good. I just have a hard time finding use for them, mostly for this. So a couple things. I don't often make actual tacos at home. I might make taco ingredients, but just have it by itself. And what I generally use tortillas for is sometimes to do taco stuff, but mostly so I could also make quesadillas. And it's more difficult to make a quesadilla with a corn tortilla than it is with a flour tortilla, at least for me. So I think I would prefer, if I'm making them at home, I generally have flour tortillas at home more than corn. Yeah. What about you?
They're all good. Definitely prefer a soft taco on either than the hard shell. There is a company here in Lawrence, Kansas, of all places, called the Caramello Tortillas. They're flour, and they have a few varieties on differing what fat they use to fry them in. So they have a pork fat one, a duck fat one, and an avocado oil one. Are absolutely fantastic. Really, 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 not good for Kansas, good. Really, really good. And yeah, we use, and they're on the smaller end, not super small, but fairly small. And we use those for both quesadillas. I guess we've actually only ever used them for quesadillas because we just can't get enough of them. But we should give it's tough because most authentic street tacos have cilantro in it. I can't have cilantro.
That's true.
So it's usually, if I have to be in control of it. And, you know, I can say, oh, no cilantro, but I always feel weird doing that, so.
When I get cilantro to have it at home, it's almost always because I'm making salsa.
Mm-hmm,
I rarely use the actual cilantro like over the taco, you know, over whatever. Although that's great. Like, I like that. It's just I don't like take that extra step when I'm home. I usually just get the cilantro because I'm putting this in something or whatever. But I will say, you know, generally the soft tacos are the way to go for like the true like Mexican tacos, but I often have a craving for a hard shell taco. It's weird because, you know, the Taco Bell thing is like, it's such a unique, like, or not, I don't know if unique is the right word. It just has a very distinct, like, I think it's the crunch. There's the the thicker, like saucy beef, like in the taco is very distinct. And like, I think it's definitely a nostalgic pull, I think. So like that has a nice little pull to it where I was like, okay, I kind of want to have like, I want to eat three Taco Bell tacos right now or something like that. But like, even, I guess it just depends on the place, but like I will eat a hard shell taco, like, as well.
I mean, I will too. Yeah, you're right. If I have a preference, that's where the line is.
Yeah, like the little street tacos and just having like a bunch of those or something like that is probably the best way to go. And like as simple as possible. You too, mostly. Usually like meat, for me, like cilantro and onion. Sorry, Jacob. And then sometimes cheese. Although if I'm making them at home, I'll throw cheese on there. I will throw jalapenos and tomatoes and other stuff in there. Onions, maybe. We're recording this during the day, so like it's actually better because it's almost lunchtime. or it's past lunchtime for you, depending on when you're planning. But I'm going to go get tacos now. So I think what a perfect way to end. The Dodgers may have ended their week terribly, but we ended our podcast deliciously because we're going to go eat tacos. I hope you are too. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with another episode of 3 Inning Save podcast next week. Thank you.